Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Matty Gladden Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This four-year-aged bourbon is double-pot distilled and non-chill filtered and has a full-bodied mouthfeel with eucalyptus, molasses, clove, ginger, and slight citrus, as well as grains of paradise. The finish is long and reappearing on the back of the tongue with notes of pepper, tobacco leaf, and mint cream. All of our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick, respect the grain, please enjoy responsibly, and be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to this podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. This is a special podcast. I'm excited. We are at the Watershed Distillery in Columbus, Ohio. And we have three very special guests, which I'll have you guys introduce yourselves.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. This is Greg Lehman. I'm the founder and CEO of Watershed Distillery.
This is Ann Dimmick. I am the resident bourbon nerd and also brand manager for our brown spirits portfolio.
My name is Aaron Harris, head distiller, Watershed Distillery.
It's so exciting. Great to have you guys here. Coming down that food pairing dinner and the whole bottled and bond and blend launch, the bourbon blend launch, that was just such an awesome experience. And then being able to come back here and talk to you guys directly in a table setting on Facebook Live. So say hi to everybody on Facebook Live. If anybody has questions while you're watching on Facebook Live, we have Roxy here. She will be from time to time chiming in to see if anybody has questions. So feel free as we go about. But Greg, one of the things that that you've talked about and that I've heard you talk about is how you started this. And you're not necessarily right now a new distillery. You've been doing this for a little bit. It's kind of like you're getting the complete legs under you, but you know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's, we're in our 11th year here and it feels like, yeah, we are just, I still think of us as a startup on some level, but yeah, we're just, if we could just get a little farther, we'd be like this established company. In my mind, that's how it is. But when I walk through and look at it, I'm like, oh yeah, we have quite a good thing going here. And the team we've put together, and I look at the talent on the team, it's pretty fun, pretty amazing. It didn't start like that. It started with two guys, myself and one other guy, and we loved the idea of being part of this community, the hospitality community, the spirits community, but neither one of us knew anything about it, and we didn't know how to distill, and we didn't have any money. But we thought, hey, if we made gin, would people be excited about it? If we made bourbon, would they be excited about it? And it's not surprising if you ask your friends, hey, if we made bourbon, you think that'd be a good idea if we left our jobs and made bourbon or gin? And every single one of them was like, yes, yes, do that. Please go. So we raised a little bit of money and we obviously did a bunch of research, bought a still, and really took very small steps. We didn't start with a lot of money. And so for that reason, it's taken us 11 years to get to this point. It's just a lot of hard work, making stuff the wrong way, figuring out how to do it right, get a little better here, a little better there. And it's fun to have people through the distillery that were here in 2010 or 2011, 2012 to see it because the change has been incredible.
Okay. So, Anne, give us a little bit about your background and what you've done.
Oh, gosh. A little bit about my background. So way back, I'm actually a mechanical engineer. And then there was a stint as a stay-at-home mom, and then somehow I answered a Craigslist ad and found myself in the spirits world. And so there's a lot that happened in between that, but been working in spirits for a little over a decade. And prior to coming to Watershed, I was actually with Campari, who owns Wild Turkey and Russell's Reserve, for quite a few years. And so I spent tons of time, and I still remember the first time where I went into the Rick House with Eddie and a group to pick a single barrel, and I'm like, I found my purpose in life. This is amazing. And so was lucky enough a couple of years ago to have the opportunity to come here and have a 5-minute commute and have a desk that is just steps away from lots and lots of barrels that are aging that never gets old.
I wondered why you wanted that.
Yeah, that was why I did that.
That all makes sense.
I think going into a rick house for the first time, and I didn't know, so I went in the first time, and the smell is just so fantastic. And but then you're there, and you kind of if you're visiting or whatever, and you get away from it, and then all of a sudden when you go back, you realize how much you miss it. It's almost like a spiritual type thing. And what I found was cool is I initially, when I first got into this, I thought that only happened in Kentucky. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, you mean I can just drive an hour here or drive an hour there? It's almost like sometimes I just like to just come down and just sneak into the rick house and then leave and go back just to get that smell.
That's still there.
So Aaron, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm here is because when I saw that you had come to Watershed, I hadn't done a lot of craft distilleries, you know, outside of Kentucky. I've been to a couple, had been there. But then when I saw that, I contacted you on Facebook, and I think I did a friend request. You friended me almost like 5 minutes later, and then I invited you to the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and all of a sudden you were there, and I'm just like, well, this is only 2 hours away. I don't have to drive 5 or 10 hours to get there. So I was like, started talking to you, and I'm glad I did. So tell us a little bit about how you got here.
Yeah, so I think it's been 7-8 years now since I started my journey with Barton Distillery at 1792. I took a swing shift, second shift distillery supervisor position where I spent a lot of time in the distillery, all hours of the night, dead of winter, heat of summer, doing every job possible, learning every job possible in a union environment. I wouldn't trade that time for anything. I met a lot of good friends, still have a lot of good friends from there. But our world of distilling, and especially in the upper leadership, extending from, you know, a distillery supervisor to a distillery manager to a director to head or master distiller, is very slim. And when you get those opportunities to move, you do it. So I took a position as distillery supervisor / distillery manager at Lux Row. And that was an opportunity to help build that from the ground up. So I went with it, learned a lot from Master Distiller John Rimpey and several contractors in the design and basically all the infrastructure needed for, you know, world-class distillery. And pretty proud of that place. It's got my touches everywhere still. Once again, if you are looking to move, you got to kind of find those outlets, especially if you want to stay in this career, which I absolutely love. I saw an ad for the head distiller position at Watershed, and came up. I had a conversation with Greg for, I don't know, 2 or 3 conversations, and came up for an interview. And kind of, you know, I expected a smaller location, but it's not too bad. It's really perfect for the brand. It's perfect for the size that we are here at Watershed, and you know, really fell in love with the culture that I was a part of and seeing, you know. And once I convinced the wife, you know, it's all history, hopefully, from there. And we've enjoyed our time. So
was that the hardest thing to do? Is convince the wife?
No. I got to tell my wife that she didn't have to work anymore, so it was fine.
You had that in your back pocket, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, and that's something that as I go through different places and distilleries, those stories are all from what Greg, you've done, to how other people, you know, like you said, you're a Craigslist ad, even though there was a lot of different stuff, or, you know, you're moving through and moving up and about. And then when you look at the history, the overall history of whiskey in the United States, it seems like it's always been that way. I mean, look at the amount of beams that distilled at other distilleries. I mean, they weren't sitting there going, well, if you're going to leave Jim Beam, they didn't. They encouraged it. It's kind of like this family that, you know, and so as people keep coming through, it seems like almost everywhere, the thing that makes it work is the closeness of the people and their dedication, because it's such a different type job. It's not like you said you had a desk, but it's not like a desk job. And one of the few jobs left in America where it's okay to drink whiskey at lunchtime because it's your job, right? That's the uniqueness of it. But I also find that the actual spirits tie people together too. And I think in America overall, and I think you'll agree, people have switched over to their perception of how you drink. I mean, we don't go out and drink just to get drunk. Now, young people still do that, really, you know, but they don't know what they're doing yet. Right. But now it's more so as a stress relief, it's relaxing. It's common to have just one pour and that's it, or just with friends have a couple pours. It's not about the end result of just getting, you know, totally drunk and irresponsible. And I think that's switched to the point where even the younger generation now coming into this, I see them getting involved into it. So now I wanted to ask you all that question. Do you see younger people now enjoying the spirits? Do you see that happening more, or is it pretty much the same as what it's been for the last 10 years?
Well, I think my definition of younger people keeps growing, and so
there's a whole bunch more of them every year,
it seems like. I think there is this, the spirits industry, and maybe the whole alcohol industry, since we've been in it the last 10, 11 years, people and old, young, everyone in between tend to be focused more and more on quality over quantity. I think there's been a shift that direction, which is why so many of these craft brands are coming up, because they're unique, they're high quality, they're different, and people are looking for that experience. And not only the experience, but the story. When you look at the bourbon industry specifically, and the younger generation is into this too, but they want to be part of the story, or know the story, or have a story behind what they're drinking. And that's one of the things I think makes local so powerful, because you can meet the people and you can hear the story, and then you can go tell the story, or even somehow be a little bit of a part of the story. So I don't know.
No, I agree. And so when I think back to 6 or 7 years ago, and we were always hearing like, oh, the fastest growing group of consumers is women. And I would hear that, but I didn't see that when I went to different bourbon events. And there was one that I just did maybe like a month ago with Bottled and Bond. And it was 100 people, and they were in tables of 8, and every single table had at least 2 women, if not more. And it was really the first time in a group of that size where I'm like, yep, this is confirmed. It really is. So it's getting younger. It's also the average knowledge has grown so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. They really, I mean, people know a lot about it. They know the questions to ask.
Yeah. And I think there's a drive to be unique, and I think that's human nature. So everyone wants to be unique in their own right, as well as I think it's turning to being unique in the spirits that you're enjoying. And I think that's true with all the variations of the same bourbon that you're seeing out there, and definitely the different offerings.
And I agree with what you said. When I got into this, I got into this and started podcasting. The podcast isn't even 2 years old, and I had been into it for about a year. So I'm like new. I mean, I drank Jack Daniels and Jim Beam as a kid. My dad was a Jack Daniels drinker. So I drank whiskey the way that you just bypass everything. That was the goal. You know, it was cool to drink it, but you weren't drinking it because you loved the taste. You were, you know. But now that I've gotten into this, and right when I got into it, and that's just like 3.5 years ago, okay? People still wanted that consistency. They weren't open at 3.5 years ago for something that changed. Like they would, like you would, they would take a grain forward bourbon that you could taste the grain, and it wasn't the classic caramel from Kentucky, and they would just rip it. Like, that's the worst stuff I've ever had. You hear it now. I mean, even the single barrel with Blanton's. I mean, Blanton's was doing single barrel. Well, the reason why everybody argues about it is because all the single barrels can't be good. Some have to be better than others. And if you get a really good one, Blanton's the greatest thing that ever happened. And you get a crappy one, that's way too much money. You know, so the consistency in a single barrel just isn't there. But right now, everybody isn't looking for consistency. The people out there that were always, you know, drinking on this, on the level of the single barrels or the bottles and bonds, you know, they're looking for different changes in flavors. They want different flavors. They're embracing the fact that whiskey can taste like something other than caramel. It can be pear. There can be pear in it. There can be other flavors, and they love it. And that's one of the things that I've noticed since I've been doing this, that it's changed, and it changed really quick. And I think it's great for you guys, because that's what the craft distillery is doing right now, presenting something. You guys are making an Ohio, you know, bourbon, Ohio straight bourbon. And that in itself is something that has to have its unique profile. You don't want to be making a Kentucky bourbon here, because in Kentucky, those bourbons are pretty much covered. But everybody wants something else, and that's something that I thought, you know, I've noticed that's kind of what you guys are doing here, you know, and I think that's going to be very advantageous. But also, the other aspect that you guys have done, and I have to say, living in Ohio, that your distribution, whatever you did, covered the state. You had the state covered, and that's what I think that's something where you guys have excelled, and I wanted to know if was there a secret to it, or is it just hard work?
Yeah, it's just a lot of work. When we started out, when we started in this industry, the state of Ohio, actually, you took your product in, and they had to taste it, and they would tell you if they were going to list it. So there was a whole presentation you did, but they tasted the bottles. So my business partner and I went in, and we set our two bottles down on the table, and we awkwardly sat down about halfway. The table was about three times as long as this. We sit about halfway down. There's three people from the state on the end. And we started going through our marketing plan. Like, all right, we're going to spend $50 on this. And I mean, it was a small marketing plan, maybe more than 50 bucks, but wasn't much. And they listened for about 5 minutes. They crack open the bottles. They taste them. And in that moment, they say, okay, we're going to list you in the state. You got it. And of course, my business partner is still like going on about the marketing plan. I'm kicking him under the table, like, let's go. They said yes. Because in that moment, if they had said no, we wouldn't have been able to sell in the state. And so when they said yes, we'll put you in 22 stores. So we were in 22 of the 480 state agencies. And what we did, we were pumped about those 22 stores, and we went out and met with those stores and started getting demand built in those stores. And we just, once we got demand in those stores, we asked for a few more, and we got a couple more and a couple more. And we spent so much time out talking to customers and getting them to retell our story and getting them excited about the brand. It's just, you know, we are in a lot of places now, but it's 11 years of work. And it's not just me. Like, we have a great team now that's helped, and they do all kinds of stuff for us. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of people that have gotten excited about the story and the brand and helped tell it.
So it's more than just having a great product.
Yeah, I mean,
well, of course.
I think the product is a must.
Right.
But even without that, it takes a lot of time for people to taste that product. Like, right. You got to take it and open the bottle for them, pour it in a Glencairn and say, hey, taste this bourbon. What do you think? Because it's hard to, especially you rewound 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, the number of people going in and searching for that special bourbon on the shelf was a lot smaller. And so really getting them to open the bottle and taste it was the trick. But then once they taste it and they hear the story, they're excited about it, then they can go tell it.
All right, Aaron. So now that you've been here, Give me some numbers on how much you've been distilling, you know, how often you're in there distilling, you know, are you producing, what have you been producing since you've been here?
So luckily we have a plethora of bottles, brands to fill, in the distillery since we do all of it here. We are typically mashing 3 days out of the week, and then the next 5 days we're distilling off of our head frame column. So we'll be producing about 19 barrels a week once we've got our distilling done. In the meantime, while we're distilling, we're not mashing. We are making 4-peel gin, and we're making our vodka, and we're steeping gill gin, making gill gin. And seasonal efforts are based on our old-fashioned blend and our apple brandy. And once we're dumping, we put once we have dumped barrels, our barrels, our watershed barrels, we will throw in our 4-peel gin, and we create our bourbon barrel gin product.
Okay. So you've been busy.
Very busy.
Yeah. And 19 barrels, put that in perspective, I think... 19 barrels a week.
It equals a big party. 19 barrels is
big
party.
It's big enough.
Oh, yeah. 53. Yeah.
Big party.
Yeah, definitely.
And lots of friends.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when the Browns win the Super Bowl this year. That's the party right there. You'll cover it.
Go Cleveland.
So then you guys have also added the restaurant. Which, like I said, was that pairing dinner was fantastic that I was down for. And I just wanted to know when did that come, you know, into what you wanted to do?
When we started, and I was the main one that was in this camp, when we started the distillery in 2010, there was a spoken rule. Something we didn't talk about. We were like very adamant. We're never going to start a restaurant. We're in this industry. We're going to be close to it. We're going to have fun, but we're never starting a restaurant. Well, so many people came on tour, were around these cool stills, big equipment, and they just wanted to hang out after the tour. They'd buy their bottles and just hang out. And we're like, I want to go home. Like, you're pumped about the story. You bought the bottle. There's nothing else to sell. Like,
yeah, get the hell out of here.
See you later. And so then we started asking, like, hey, if we could pour a cocktail, would you guys want a cocktail? And, you know, you have 15 people that just went on tour and bought bottles, and they're like, hell yeah, I want a cocktail. And it was kind of like at the beginning when we were asking if we should make gin or bourbon. And so by reading the crowd a little bit, we're like, we should put in a bar. And then that kind of snowballed a little bit, and we're like, well, if we put in a bar, we should have food. And it went from food truck to, no, we should make it line up with the brand. We're crafting. We're putting all this work into these spirits that taste amazing. Let's do that on the food side as well. So we went out and got the best chef that we knew, and Jack is amazing. We were fortunate enough to know a few amazing chefs, and we had to ask Jack. I think the third time we went and asked him, he finally agreed. He said no a couple of times before he agreed to come down and do it. But he's definitely done some amazing stuff for us, and you really got to see the best side, most fun thing that we do when it all comes together with a pairing dinner with food and spirits and everybody in one room having a great night. That was a big time. That was fun.
Yeah, that there's no doubt. And honestly, when you tell that story, him coming to this makes sense, because right now, if you look at all the different places, especially with bourbon and the bourbon cooking aspect that's out there. There's so much out there, the glazes and everything that you, and then how it illustrates how your palate changes, even from a beginning of a dinner to an end of a dinner, and it can, and how a chef can affect that to make what you're drinking taste better. And that's something that's just in its, food critics have always known this type of thing. But when it comes to with the whiskey aspect, that's just like in the beginning stages, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm. And something like that will continue to grow, because the chefs love taking booze into the kitchen to, I'll say, cook with it, in quotes, yeah, because they get to try it and have fun with spirits now. I'm kidding about that. Our chef team does a great job, whether they're cook them with spirits or not, but they always have a good time pairing stuff with what we're doing and getting to play with the spirit side.
Okay. And then, Aaron, one last thing on before we get to taste some of this. What about experimental? Have you guys come up with something like that, you know, because there's a lot of different greens out there that people have been experimenting with. Are you guys looking into that experimental stuff?
For me, for right now, for us, it's about consistency. We're pushing hard to bring a consistent product to the table, to the warehouses, to our consumers, that is not consuming a lot of our time. However, there are different products that you will see in the next 6-8 months that will be new for us. Something that we're really working on is a rye product. We haven't quite figured out how to bring that about just yet, or how we want to introduce it, but it's very, very good, and we are chomping at the bit to release some of it.
Okay, excellent. I look forward to that. And it's this is something. Now, are you guys sourcing it, or have you distilled it?
This is from Watershed.
Oh, that's even more exciting.
First release at some point will be.
Because I'm the one thing I found that I like rye if it wasn't distilled at MGP. Because MGP, when it comes to rye, they've done a lot of stuff. It's just not a flavor profile that I like. Anything that has that in there, I can tell, and it's not good to me. But you know, like all whiskey, it's a personal experience. The goal is to find what you like and drink what you like, because there's enough to choose from. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So
there is one other project out there that we've been working on that, in its. Can I say it now, or is that...
What do you mean, can you say it now? Yeah, you can release anything on my podcast.
We're the only ones that get in trouble.
Yeah, please do.
So, you know, Aaron's on the distillation side, and this is a little bit different than that. So we make Nocino every year. And Nocino, to make it, you take vodka and you chop up black walnuts and you soak it in the vodka. And then you add some vanilla bean and some citrus and some cool stuff. Well, this year we decided to, instead of using vodka as the base for all of it, we made some with bourbon as the base. And so Nocino's not ready. It won't be ready until December, but we're really excited about this.
Well, do you still call it Nocino, or do you have to come up with a different name?
I don't know. We haven't gotten that far. We mixed it up, and we think it's going to be delicious. But we might have to rename it. We'll see.
That's a good idea.
Excellent.
It's like America meets Italy, and we're blending it together. So
yeah.
I'm trying to think of a great name right now, and I got
Nocino.
Yeah.
I kind of like Nocino, but.
But. Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. Our Nocino already pairs so well with bourbon. In cocktails, our guys behind the bar mix different stuff all the time, and it's usually delicious. So I'm excited about this. See what happens.
All right, so what do you got for us to taste today?
Ooh.
Aaron, would you like to try it first?
I think we should start with our brand new, age-stated Watershed Distillery Bourbon. This one's pretty unique because it's actually a blend, which we've been blending our own barrels, you know, for years now.
Right.
But this is a blend of three different spirits, two bourbons that we make in-house, and then one are from barrels that we hand selected as a team. And it includes, it's age stated 4 years, but it's actually a 4 to 6 year blend. And it includes our barrel strength bourbon that we finished in our very own Ohio apple brandy barrels. So if you've ever had that, which that's a seasonal allocated, usually sells out within a day, that comes out on our anniversary each year.
Yeah.
That is included in this.
My brandy days were, when I was younger, brandy didn't agree with me as far as I couldn't drink much of it without dying. But when I was at the Spirit of French Lick, Alan Bishop, he does a Hoosier apple brandy, and that was delicious. And then, you know, what you guys are doing sounds exactly similar, and what I could taste in the blend, you know, that definitely, you know, aging it in there, that I can tell that that's delicious. Because it makes the bourbon taste delicious.
Yeah. You'll have to try some before you leave, because it's apple brandy is like our fun, nerdy project.
Yeah.
That we actually do it on both of our stills separately, age it separately,
right,
blend it together. And it's not sweet. It's, we're not talking apple pucker. It's,
right,
it's
right,
really like a very fine, kind of like a light Irish whiskey is usually what I say.
Yeah, an apple distillate, a light apple distillate.
Right.
Yeah.
It's still got the apple notes, but it's not like you're drinking a sweet fruit wine.
Right. It's it's way closer to whiskey than
exactly
that.
Yeah.
And it's what Anne was saying about using each still. It's wild how different the same batch of fermentation tastes off either still. One, it's bright in green apple, and the other, it's really red apple, earthy. And so when we first started, we said, I don't know which still will be better. So we tried it off both, and we fell in love with both, so we barreled it, and the rest is history.
Well, that's the first taste of whiskey I've had today, which is always the shocker. But there's good. You can taste the red sweet apple. But there's also a nice cinnamon. I'm getting, you know, a sweet cinnamon. You know, that there's a little bit of cinnamon, and not a little. There's a good amount, and it tastes. It's pretty delicious.
That mid palate sparkle. I think this one is like honey, and
I get a little.
Little bit of apple.
And there's a little bit on the back palate, a little oak. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's over the cinnamon or the honey overrides anything bitter from the oak, you know, because sometimes mm-hmm. the oak will give you that.
Right.
Now, Roxy here, she loves oaky. I converted her from drinking Chardonnay. And she loved oak barrel Chardonnay. To she loves the oak out of the to in the bourbon, you know, in whiskey. It's just like if it's the oakier, the better in most cases.
So I would enjoy this because of that oak finish that it has on my palate.
And then on the finish just now, I got a little vanilla, which it came back. It's got a long finish.
And some cocoa beans.
Yes.
There you go.
We hear that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is. Now, I have to say, I was at my local store just yesterday, and this was on the shelf.
Oh, that's great.
Which
that's
was, good. You know, I didn't see the bottled and bond wasn't there, but that was on the shelf, and I was kind of excited. And it was, you know, I'm a tall guy, so that, you know, face level for me is top shelf, and you guys were face level top shelf.
That's an expensive way to live your life.
It is.
I know it.
Beginner to person bourbon because it's very drinkable.
It is. It's just, it's an easy sipper.
Nice and drinkable.
Super approachable.
Some certain bourbons, you know, too much for people to start out.
Right, but it's got a really complex finish, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to get a little different flavor on your palate and the finish probably with each sip, and it just gets better.
Got to revisit.
I agree.
Yes. Have a little more.
Once again, very excited about what you guys are putting out. It's definitely, I think you guys are there. And you probably won't have it on the shelf for long because it'll just disappear.
That's a good
thought. Gonna have to make more.
Yeah.
Well,
you were mentioning the bottled and bond wasn't at your store. It's only, the bottled and bond isn't in as many stores, so people might have to look a little bit more for that, but it is out there across the state, but not in quite as many stores.
Yes. And it just hit e-commerce online as of today.
Now, as far as you guys go, is it all gone from here? Is the distributors bought it all, and now they're distributing?
The first batch of bottled and bond is done. Yeah.
So you guys are sold out.
Yeah. We're working hard to get the next batch, but
now is that common to be sold out that quick?
This is our first time with bottled and bond, so I don't know.
With the new product,
with the new product, it goes pretty quick at first, and then you kind of hit a
Well, considering that it's a bottled and bond and you got every batch is going to be a little different, I don't think you're going to have that problem.
I think it'll go quick, which is great.
The response has been great.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Well, I'm glad. But I mean, I have to say, you've earned it. You guys, you know, it's not like it's one thing, like everybody knows who you are, but now you just produce this product and it's like, it's good. It's good. So that's, you know, you produce a good product and you have name recognition in this, you know, I think the problem will be just trying to get it there as much as you can.
That's great.
All right. So are we going to?
I was going to say some bottled and bonds.
Yes.
Who wants to talk about this one?
You got it.
Everybody wants to talk about this one. So this is 100% distilled, aged, and bottled right here. It is a selection of our favorite barrels, after argument, but it's always a fun, spirited discussion. So, I think you will find that this one, it's 100 proof versus the last one, our 90 proof. And it's a very full-flavored bourbon. It's barrels from a single season, which is, you know, 1 6-month, either January through June of the same year or July through December of the same year, which it was fun because we actually launched it on July 1st. So we were able to say, oh, I need one. We're able to say, you know, if we distilled something yesterday, it couldn't go in a batch with something we distilled today.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect time of year to have that discussion.
So, I, you know, and bottled and bond, it doesn't mean quite what it meant back in the day. It is a format that's laid down that you can expect consistency from.
Right.
But, I mean, you guys don't have a tax man here checking and making sure your bonded warehouses are being run properly. I mean, it's just the difference.
They have the ability to come through.
So right,
they,
right.
You know, they have all the schematic, the drawing, and, you know, they've been here to see and get it set up. But they're not here. It used to be, I think, they were on site every single
day.
Yeah,
they actually slept there.
Slept there, yep.
It was their job, you know. And what was it? And then making sure all the taxes were being produced, you know, that was something that ran our country for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, they were serious about it. Now today, you know, it's like, it's treated like the normal business that they've got that certain aspect of, what would you say, trust or whatever, they're able to take in quarters now from, but you still have to pay for it to be a bonded warehouse. So it really comes down to a lot of times government money.
Sure.
And they take out their fair share, don't they? But I guess, you know, everywhere I go, it's a really good paying industry. I mean, you work hard, but people in from almost all aspects of what you're doing are making a good living.
Yeah, so, we like to hope so. I think our team has done well. We've been very fortunate here, and it's great because that allows you to have great people on the team, and I think that's what we have.
Yeah, I just cheers to everybody. Anybody listening, if that doesn't drink whiskey, start.
Yeah. I like how you tied that together. That was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Cheers.
Cheers.
There you go. Cheers.
This has a lovely nose.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's there's some butterscotch right there I'm getting. And I didn't get butterscotch when I was drinking the one I just got. That's what I love about it. It's as things go about and you dive in different times, you just can pick out different things. And it just could be, you know, people don't realize there are days when your tasting and smelling is on and there's days when it's completely off. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you just try and keep it consistent, right?
This has some nice floral notes on the nose, like honeysuckle, jasmine, some little lime or lemon. I don't know. My nose is on today.
Yeah, it's so. So she also knows all the notes because she's a doTERRA essential oil representative. So she knows a lot of distilled notes.
This is the one that we usually hear dark chocolate, like at the end of the finish on this one.
Well, now caramel and butterscotch comes
like
out.
Some,
Yeah. Well, and chocolate for me is very unique because it's like as your palate develops, initially leather and tobacco are kind of like what some of the stuff that you can pick up early on. But then as you go further, if there's a little bit of sweetness added to leather or tobacco, it picks up as chocolate. You know, and so there's some, that's one thing that I found that as you keep, now, Aaron, that's a good question. You've been doing this for a long time, tasting. Did your palate, as you went through as a taster, does it go through stages where you seem to all of a sudden pick up stuff that you didn't pick up, you know, like all of a sudden you might get, for a week, you might be tasting custard. Or do you start picking up more chocolates? Do you find that that happens?
I would say that it is 100% possible. My wife would tell you if I'm eating more junk food or takeout, then I'm not going to taste anything. It's all going to taste greasy or just heavy, fatty acids. Some of that stuff, oils are going to pop out, a lot of grains. But I can physically tell if I'm eating a little bit cleaner, if I'm not, you know, putting away so many calories. I feel like I taste a lot more notes, especially if I'm like a day like yesterday. We tested about 13 barrels.
13.
I put away a lot of water that day, and that helped. It helped open up a lot of palate. Mm-hmm.
And then also, I agree. Like there's like if I've been through tastings where I'm just drinking a ton of water, and I like to drink ice water, and. So as I'm going about that, most of the time that's very beneficial. And if you take a sip of water and then you've been drinking it neat, and you don't even have to add the water to it, you just drink it afterwards, it changes it opens it up. Mm-hmm. But then there's times where the water just seems to drown me, and it's just not working. So same kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. A few drops really is all it would need, especially with a 1 ounce pour or something like that.
Yeah. So one of your things is you're the aging manager specialist. What does that technically? You know, what are you actually doing? Is it about where stuff is aging in the Rick House or?
Not that. To kind of go back to it, it's a lot of multi-generational spreadsheets. So what Aaron is making today is not going to see a shelf for 4, 5, 6, maybe more years. We shall see how far we get. And so there's so much advanced planning that takes place in terms of, and then as barrels come of age, you know, we used to have just one bourbon product. We now have our 90 proof bourbon. We have our bottled in bond. We have an allocated single barrel program. When we're emptying our bourbon barrels, we're finishing our Nocino in it. We've got our apple brandy, and then we're finishing bourbon in those. And so there's a lot of moving parts. And so forecasting and going forward, you know, I don't want to say it was easier, but I'm guessing it was probably a little easier that first year.
Absolutely.
Maybe a little bit. It was probably harder to pay the bills that first year, you know. But when you get into, I know I have friends that are at some of the larger companies, and it all kind of goes based on the average age of, you know, what your portfolio is. So for a company like us, you'll have a forecast that goes out quite a few years. For some of the big companies, those forecasts can be 20, 25 years out.
Okay. So it's majorly keeping track of where and what what you have is pretty much, and how old it is and how much it's been aging and when it's coming. And you're basically spreadsheeting that and making sure that's completely covered. So,
but don't let her fool you. She gets to taste bourbon.
It's just
a lot,
tasting
too.
Bourbon.
Well, no,
you got to know when the barrels are ready, and the only way to do that, you can look on the spreadsheet.
Yeah, you have to also decide. You know,
well, she's deciding. She's like, hey, today that looks like we need to taste that, and that was it's 4 years and 7 days, and let's get that. Let's roll that one out, right?
Guys, we got to pull some barrels. So It's fun. So there's the Excel and the multi-generational spreadsheets, and then there's the tasting bourbon. And luckily I get to do both.
All right.
Yeah.
So now what are we going to, are we tasting something next?
Okay. We brought, I think we should blind on these.
I don't care.
There's no lobbying either. And so we did for the first time ever, our restaurant just reopened back in June after being closed during COVID. And although we have barrel strength single barrels, we've never sold them out of our distillery. So in honor of the restaurant reopening, I think this was Greg's idea. This was a good idea. I don't know, but it was a good idea, whoever had this one. The restaurant, our chef and his team actually chose a single barrel, which is available for sale at the distillery. And then the ladies of the distillery, which I was part of, we chose a single barrel. And then Aaron and his team, distillery team, also chose a single barrel. And the story behind it is that we pulled, I think it was 14 different barrels.
This is a legend.
This is all a legend. But we pulled like 14 barrels. We let our chef and his team, you know, taste through all of them. They got it down to about four. And then when they were done, we picked from those as well. And Aaron said, so do I have to pick from your...
leftovers.
Your 14 or so. And famous last words. I said, well, no. You guys are the distillery team. If it's, it must be straight bourbon, it must be at least 4 years old. But if you can get to it, you can have it. And they were hiding a barrel. I swear. Mm-hmm. You guys were hiding this barrel. So
they, that's what you do all the time, right? Just hide them. Just keep them away from her.
So they're both very good. They are both 100% distilled, aged, and bottled here. And they're a great representation of the diversity in the single barrel program. And really, it's just fun to talk about because they have totally different personalities. So I think... should we blind to these?
Go for it.
Sure.
Okay.
I won't look. Let's we can talk. So now that you've come from, did you come from Lux? Lux. Okay, so Barton first and then Lux. Then, so what's it like being the head distiller, the master? So, you know, now is that both of them or just one?
Yes.
That's sample one.
Sample one.
Both have sample one.
Okay, sample one over here.
Number one.
So what was that like now that you're, you know, where before, I'm sure you were working with the master distiller and to run things, but now, you know, now that you're, that have that responsibility, what's the main difference? Is there a main difference? Are you still just part of, you know, a team, or are you, you know, what did you...
I'm really getting the best of both worlds right now, because you're going to have head distillers, or if they, you know, they choose the title master distiller out there, that are going to be strictly marketing arms and marketing tools to spread out their spirits and spread the good word.
Right.
However, you're going to have those blue-collar guys that are, and gals that are putting in the effort and blood, sweat, and tears that are making the spirits every day and then going and, you know, trying to promote it. Fortunately for me, I was exposed very quickly to all of the blood and sweat it takes to put in to what we do to put in into our spirits and production, and now I'm getting to do the icing on the cake and getting to talk about it and keeping to, you know, talk about what I love to do, and it's a pleasure that I haven't had thus far.
To be able, so that part of it is the promoting, and that part that's new to you. Where the other part that wasn't, you were a part of that team making it and whatever, and so that was familiar. But this is a little bit of the different.
Yes, the heavy production is bread and butter. This is from my past, and this has been the this is one of the reasons why I took this position. But it was the right move for my career, and I think I picked the best possible place I could possibly be, especially with the team that has been built here, like Greg has been saying, with Ann and you know, the infrastructure here is that of a world-class distillery. We have the infrastructure to do way more than what our footprint shows. So, and I think all of these brands are a testament to that. I really do.
Yeah, and I think, like, at the timing, too, for you, it's kind of like 3 years ago, you know, the term master distiller, it's used way more now. There's a lot more people who are master distillers but like you said, there's some master distillers who are basically just, you know, figureheads. I mean, and then there's some master distillers that are hugely involved with it, like Jimmy Russell. I mean, God, it's not like he doesn't bring everything to the table, but as far as production right now, I'm sure Eddie's heading up a lot of it, but Jimmy's still right there. You know, they've got two master distillers. That's what they say. You know what I mean? But at the same time, that's more marketing. Where here, I think the craft distilleries, and I listen to Fred Minnick all the time. And just because he's somebody, as far as podcasting, who's got it down, and he's ready to go with craft distilleries. And I think it's just the beginning, you know. And then, you know, what is going to be the hardest problem for you? It's just producing enough, and I can't wait.
Well, you mentioned Eddie, and he didn't become master distiller until, I mean, that was within the decade that we're currently in.
Yeah.
It was 30-some years working every job in the distillery.
Right. So that, and he's only co-master distiller, which
yeah.
You know, he's like, right. Jimmy hasn't moved out, you know, and no. Eddie, and Jimmy still does a lot. Now, with what happened in the world the last 2 years, mm-hmm. they've kept him calm, you know, out of the limelight, but everybody's been out of the limelight. I really think from the marketing standpoint of what happened with, you know, in the world the last 2 years, I don't even like to say it, but from a whiskey distilling position, I really think it was good for the whiskey, because you guys could concentrate on distilling and everything there still was that market, you know, that people were still drinking, no one stopped drinking, but at the same time, there wasn't the need to do as much promotion. It was almost like everybody was able to get back down to just producing and working on their whiskey. And I think everybody did that.
Yeah, we were producing, but we actually have a huge gap of bourbon that we didn't make bourbon because we were making hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. Ah. So we switched and made hand sanitizer and lost 4 months of bourbon making. But it was the right thing at the right time, and the community needed it. We needed it, and it was almost like great medicine for our people to be part of the solution and working hard to help when people needed it. And I just saw that on people's faces here. So we all knew, like, well, we're gonna have a gap in bourbon. But I think, you know, we talked through it at the time, and we're like, that's all right. We're doing the right thing here. So I know some other places probably had the luxury of being able to make both at the same time or just make bourbon, but you know, we'll get in 3.5 years when we get to that point, we'll figure our way through it and it'll be fine, we'll make it. But but yeah, it was definitely different being out there. We weren't out there telling the story by any means.
Right.
It was a time when we were, you know, behind the scenes working on stuff back here.
All right, let's get ready to do the taste. Let's
sample
taste.
Sample one. And sample one. Two.
Let's sample two. Sample one first.
Initially, and we're voting for a favorite. Is that the?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
God,
who's the tiebreaker?
Aaron.
No lobbying.
Pressure. You're putting me under pressure.
Now I know which one you're going to pick. It's fine.
That's a lot of caramel on that nose. Well, I don't know the difference between the two, so I have to.
So you have to try it again.
Yeah, tell me which one it is, and I'll try it again.
Just don't mix up one and two.
This is two, this is one. All right. One.
I feel like we're not making good podcasting right now. We're just being quiet.
No.
We're focused.
But
good Facebook Live.
There we are.
So they're single barrels. Mm-hmm. Proof? Are they barrel proofs or are they?
They are barrel proofs.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And they're different.
See?
From each other.
That is not fair. Hey, we're going to try single barrel. No, you didn't tell me they were barrel proofs. No, I didn't. I was just like, I took a gulp and I'm just like, oh my God, so it's
these these are from the same groupings of barrels that we set aside for our bottled and bond. It's our favorite barrels.
I would say
some are more favorite than others.
Barrel number one is delicious.
I like the caramel. I like it.
It's out in front right now.
They're both out.
Because you're drinking it right now.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't tried barrel two. Pulled the fence.
All right.
Did anybody watch that movie Legends of the Fall with Brad Pitt from like the 90s? Mm-hmm. This is forever. And you had three brothers.
Yeah.
And so the one brother got killed at war. So maybe he's OD. I don't know. But I feel like the two brothers that survived, these two bourbons are like the two brothers from that movie.
She's referring to the two brothers that survived not being murdered.
Now this goes back to my high school best friend and I would argue about which one makes the better husband. You know, I was a long-range planner even back then.
You guys were arguing? Wasn't it just both of you thought Brad Pitt would make the better
husband? No. I thought the oldest brother is the way to go. The bootlegger.
This is a new podcast idea.
Yeah, there we go. Well, no, there you go.
Movies
related to whiskey. And even though they weren't drinking a lot of whiskey in this movie, we've just related it.
So
there
I feel
you go.
One of these is like a Brad Pitt, and one of these is like the oldest brother with the 401k.
That nobody knows his name.
He was a bootlegger. He was great.
I remember.
Tall, handsome.
All right, let's do number two.
Okay.
That's a little bit more. I get like a little char on the nose. Same butterscotch. Holy sh! That body is insane.
Oh.
You can, you can swear, but I was just being, I mean, it's not, you know, I don't put this out for children.
Bourbon is not
Kentucky
for sure.
Bourbon Festival 25. And
yeah, just, no, we're not going there. I can't go there. Well.
I saw that article too.
Oh my God. The one thing you can never make everybody happy. That's one thing that if you try to make everybody happy in the whiskey industry, you will just be set up for failure.
And if you want to sell ice cream.
But they're both great.
Yeah, ice cream and bourbon, are you saying?
No, I'm saying these two single barrels. They're both
they're both.
I thought you were saying Brad Pitt and this other guy.
Yeah, well, they're two different personalities. They're, you know.
They're very different.
This is called a tangent.
Yeah, I would have no problem drinking either one of these. They're both very good. They're,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But isn't the whole idea is to pick between the two?
Right.
Yeah. Right. I think so.
Greg, did you pick?
I have picked. Am I sharing out loud or
yes,
putting
yes,
our heads down
can,
and voting?
You can share out loud.
Should we? I like them both. They're both very different bourbons, and
he's choosing between his children.
Yeah,
choosing between. You both did a great job.
Close your eyes. No. For me, the first one was my favorite. I like the sweetness on it, the complexity of it, the finish. I think it drinks really, really nicely. If I was tasting through and picking favorite barrels for the bottled and bond, this fits that flavor profile that we're looking for with the bottled and bond. I think that would go with barrel one.
I'll go second.
Okay.
For me, it was number two because I agree with everything you say about this.
Yeah.
It's more drinkable. But there's an aspect of number two that midway has this huge amount of flavor and then punches you and then hangs on to it with a whatever. And that's kind of like what whiskey is to me. So one, I enjoyed. I think exactly what you're saying. It's smooth. It fits a flavor profile and whatever. But this is basically, I want to go to a Tool helmet concert afterwards. You know, this is man, this kicks. This is a kick-ass whiskey and with a lot of flavor. So for me, usually you don't get a lot of that. So yeah. that's what I like about it.
Do we have a tiebreaker? Do we have a tiebreaker?
What about you two?
We know which is which.
You know which is which. So I like number two. Yes.
You know the difference between the both of them?
Let me tell you why.
Yes, go ahead.
So number one is sweeter, more caramel, more butterscotch, but it kind of stays that way throughout the whole palate and finish. Whereas number two is different on the nose, on the palate, on the finish. So it's just a little more complex to me. And it has packs a punch almost like a really good rye that, you know.
What I say with the number one is a really good whiskey, okay, that I'm used to.
They're both delicious.
This is just a little bit different than anything. It like sets itself apart with the punch. I mean, even like a, I would say like a Booker's is even more like this,
mm-hmm.
where this all of a sudden that mid palate sweetness. Most of the time, whiskeys hit you on the tongue and the back of the throat and skip them. And it was just like, that's why I said what I said. I'm like, oh, wow, on that. And then it just was all through the mouth. So
it has a complexity that takes you on a journey.
Yes.
Which is why I was so mad when I tasted it.
So that was the... So one was what you guys picked and two was... Okay.
But it's sweeter. The more it stays in your mouth, the sweeter it gets on the finish, though.
Yeah.
Like, it starts to...
I will say that.
The longer finish sweetens up. Yeah.
I will agree with you on that. Like, this one, there's a really lingering late finish as I just sit here. That's pretty nice. I mean, they're both... I love them both.
But there's so much going on.
I tend to favor bourbons that finish
number two.
Longer.
Number two.
But that's number one, does it remind you like a really great Rick House G?
Oh, yeah.
Like fourth floor. I mean, doesn't it?
It's
come
like
on.
Rich sarsaparilla scene.
I mean, Aaron, you have to say, you could tell the difference between the two. And if you weren't picking, would you? You don't have a problem with one, do you?
I have no problem with either of these bourbons.
Yeah. Right.
Because... first of all, the palates that pick them are very meticulous on what they like. but I will say this. Number two was one of the original, and that is King Chambers. Mm-hmm. That is one of the barrels we had picked for Bottle and Bond. The reason it did not go in the blend for Bottle and Bond because it was the only barrel out of 50 or 60 barrels that tasted like this. Mm-hmm. So it kept getting kicked to the curb and it found its way in its own special release. So we treated it as such.
Well, that's how a lot of distilleries do what they do, what they're doing. It's kind of like I was on a barrel pick with Freddie No, and we were picking amongst these barrels, and he basically said, if you don't pick that barrel, I'll figure something out to do with it, because that's how much he liked that barrel.
Totally.
So it's, and that's one of the cool things about your job also, when you're picking those single barrels, or with single barrels in the program, you are talking about tasting some of the barrels that have been picked above and beyond everything to give that uniqueness and that extra thing that everybody's looking for. So that's really kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes you're in the mood for the smooth, creamy, blurry, caramely experience, and other times you're in the mood for rain.
All right. Do we have anything left to... Are we going to try the...
Do we want to try apple brandy on the podcast?
I mean, we could. If you guys... Do you want to try, like...
We got it. Yeah. If you guys... Yeah.
Look at that, two. Apple brandy coming in from nowhere.
Let's see. I'm popping this open right
here. Yeah, empty out a Glencairn.
Get it clean, rinse it.
Yeah, this is...
Work.
Oh, rinse a Glencairn.
There's So yes, distilled from
I could tell
Ohio
that.
Apples.
That one was the blend in the apple brandy barrels, because I was even with the water poured and I could taste the apples.
Let's try this one.
Thank you.
And then our bourbon is finished in these barrels.
Right.
So it doesn't include the apple brandy. It includes bourbon finished for 2 years in apple brandy barrels.
All right. One. There we go. This is the first time we're tasting brandy on the podcast, so just so you know that.
Hey, when in Rome, uncharted territory.
Yeah.
We like apples and
oranges. It looks a little bit
like whiskey.
Yeah, no, it definitely, I would say it's got a Irish whiskey color to it. That's got that golden, but yeah.
It's delicious.
Wow.
It's very good.
Tastes like a Macintosh.
Mm-hmm.
That's especially right. After drinking barrel strength just now.
I'm sure it's helping your palate.
Yeah, it just took it right down. I mean, this is bottle drinkable.
Wouldn't
it is
great?
Interesting drinking that right after barrel strength. Right. It's the first
that's
time
fantastic.
I've had it.
It is
amazing.
No, it is. Like, there's not a lot of heat to it. It really, it's delicious.
And just so you know, the listeners know, it's 80 proof. It's not,
I'm not trying to knock your socks off.
Yeah, but it's.
But
it's
wouldn't it be cool if we had a barrel strength listing for apple brandy?
Oh.
I push that every time.
So,
I think that would be so great.
Those are the apple brandy barrels are a big favorite of our production team. So they are very fond of foolproofed apple brandies just to get a sample of it. So we always look forward to those.
Yeah. So that's definitely, there's certain days of bottling and stuff like that when you guys are emptying barrels where people look forward to more than others.
Right.
Well, especially with this apple brandy, whenever the apple cider comes in, that's a big day here.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to taste the apple cider.
Everyone gets their cider on everybody's desk, and it's pretty great.
And it's the time of the year, too, right? That's got to be the time of the year where late September?
Well, we actually make most of our apple brandy right at the end of the year. And then, so December, January, February, March, that's kind of when we make it. So because we use a local cider press, he is so busy in trying to keep up with demand in the retail world in the fall, right when apples first come off, that they'll store some apples and then they'll start pressing for us come December, January, February, March. And what he'll do, he'll press it and then he delivers it the next day. So it's very, very fresh. He'll press it and then chill it overnight and deliver it in the morning. And we start fermenting right then.
It's delicious.
It's a great time to be here.
Yeah.
The distillery smells amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does.
Well, I'm excited that I'm so close to you guys. It's just like, let me know one of those days. I'll just swing by.
That's
maybe you have to do anything. Have roll barrels, squish stuff.
Oh, yeah. Just like...
what you offer.
No, seriously, I've done it and I it's not to me, it's not work, it's fun. It's just kind of like I've rolled barrels full and empty, so it's just when I show up, it's just kind of like, and they're like, you want to help? I'm like, this isn't
you know how to drive a fork truck?
Oh yeah, like, I know how to drive fork trucks.
Did you master flipping a barrel
in? No,
master that yet?
Oh, you mean at the when they were empty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it
no,
to do
full.
It. No. I didn't know if you. But at the end, I was able to do it once.
Yes.
They were working hard to show me.
Yeah, I think people are very skittish and afraid of breaking a barrel, but it would take an army to break a barrel.
Oh yeah, when they get them off, they were coming off the box truck, and he was bouncing them down onto a tire. And it was amazing how high he could get the barrel to bounce.
You don't want to be in that strike zone.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. I think we've come to the point where we can finish this up. Hopefully, what I'd like to do is maybe come back a couple times, you know, when you guys are getting ready to, announce anything or whatever. It'd be great to come back down and do a couple more podcasts throughout the you know, it's just because you're my local podcast, you know, my local distillery that I'm excited about.
You're
that.
Welcome here anytime.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Yes, we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Today, it was wonderful. Thank you for your time. And just remember, everybody, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Check us out. You can get to Patreon. You can get to YouTube and all the social media aspects. And make sure if you're listening on Apple or iHeart that you leave some feedback for us. So it's been great. And thanks again. And then remember, good bourbon equals good friends and good times. And everybody, make sure you go out there and live dangerously.